reasons. The last time I had the opportunity to speak at the conference, I pointed out that in 2009, my colleagues agreed with me to basically make marijuana a Schedule II drug in the state of Oregon. As you probably know, the federal government still has it scheduled as a Schedule I. I think it's imperative that we protect Oregon patients by maintaining the separate system with our calling out of having a Schedule II drug reference for marijuana instead of Schedule I. I believe it gives us a better footing if, for some reason, the federal government wanted to come in, that we will be able to protect the program because we, as citizens of this state, understood back in 1998 and what we've seen over this last 15 years that medical marijuana does have medical principles that does, in fact, help many individuals. I'll share one story with you. Sitting as the chair of the Judiciary Committee during this last full session, we had a couple of different vets that came in who were suffering from PTSD. And if you remember, we had not had that listed as one of the conditions for being able to get a medical marijuana card in the state until we passed this legislation. But the story they told me is that they could go to the military, they could get all the opiates they wanted, and they could just be weaned out or whacked out to the point where they couldn't get off their couch. They could not function, they could not provide for their families, but they said they were finding relief when they were able to have certain different strains of marijuana to address their anxieties. And today I'm hoping that those individuals are taking benefit of what we have done because I feel that this is a way that we can make certain that individuals who do not need to have extreme hard narcotics that can in fact find relief through a plant should have that opportunity to do that. So that's one of the reasons I think it's important to keep these programs separate so we can have the ability to defend it if we need to. Now let me tell you, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on, as you can imagine, depending on what side of the fence you're on as to, let's just start with growers. We have indoor growers, we have outdoor growers. And of course, from my perspective, we should be able to coexist. But at the same time, I know that because of the way outdoor growers grow and they basically have one season to actually be able to plant, to harvest, and get their product, as compared to someone that's running an indoor, we need to look at the numbers that we have as to what the limitations are of the amount of quantity that an individual can have and how we're going to allow that to be mainstreamed into the system and allow for them to be able to produce what's necessary for what would be for basically a year's length of time for use of that product. So we're taking on, we have probably at least four different work groups that are working on various components of the Measure 91 implementation language. Now, 91 does deal with recreational, but I will tell you in that committee, everything that is dealing with marijuana is going through that committee. My Judiciary Committee has previously had a lot of subject matter control over controlled substances. We still do, but it does seem like a lot of the stuff that normally would be handled in my committee is now in the other committee, or at least being subsequently referred from my committee to that committee. And this is, again, to kind of make sure the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and that we're in sync as to what we need to do for both the recreational and the medical program. Now, one of the things that I have introduced as a separate bill, but I expect it will be part of a larger bill, is when we passed House Bill 3460, the medical marijuana facilities, it was an oversight, but what we did not realize, and it was totally unintended, is that if a school, looking at the distance, is 1,000 feet, if you have a place, a facility that is actually sited, and then if a school, for whatever reason, moved within 1,000 feet of that facility, under current law, that facility would have to shut its doors at the time of its next, I guess if it gets one renewal, then it would have to shut its doors. Now, clearly, we have never seen that happen to any business in this state, and I'd say probably around the country, where you would have a legitimate business that was open and doing everything right, following the rules, that they would be displaced because a school was placed within that 1,000-foot barrier. So we are going to be putting in what we call a grandfather clause that will, in fact, that allow for these various facilities to maintain their business locations and that they will not be forced to move and relocate from their existing facilities. So that's going to be one of the things that we'll be fixing. Again, these are, let's call them as unintended consequences. I also refer to these as the bill being a living document. It becomes a law, but as we actually are administering it, we realize there are some things that we didn't cover or things that maybe we intended to cover a different way and not having an outcome. So how do we actually take care of that? And that's what we're going to be doing now. So that is one concern I know a number of people had, and I want to ensure that that is going to be taken care of. Now, there's been other issues regarding labeling, packaging, and that's probably some stuff we can go in greater detail as to some of the questions. I do expect that what you're going to see is the committee has not made a decision on some of this, these pivotal parts, points, as to what type of product is going to be available on the recreational side versus what's available today in the medical. So we'll be working through that. I expect that you're going to see an emphasis on retail sales to have whatever edibles they are going to be allowed to be packaged in single dose that will be very bright line as to what they are and not being, let's say, a value pack chocolate bar that has serrated for 12 different doses. You will not, from my perspective, see that in a retail outlet where you may still see that in a medical outlet. Regarding high dose of edibles, I think that, again, that's something that will stay in the medical side, and there will be a question as to when you will see that available in retail. One of the things that I'm very conscious of is ensuring that while we are implementing this language, that we don't see some of the situations that occurred in Colorado, less to Washington State, but to Colorado, as to people who are very novice, never maybe have ever had the opportunity to indulge in cannabis for recreational purposes, and not understanding that when the package tells you this has a time delay, you should wait 35 minutes, 40 minutes before expecting anything, that they were trying to, let's say, get that high way before its time would actually manifest within the body. So I think we are going to see some opportunities here where we're going to try to play this out where it will be staggered in or phased in through this process so we can ensure that people get the education. One of the other things I'll tell you that the legislature just recently did is provide OLCC $350,000 for education. We're going to start trying to get educational messaging out soon so we can start preparing. As many of you know, 91 has its first implementation date, will be July 1 of this year. That is when individuals such as yourself and I would have the opportunity, if we chose to and were of age, to be able to possess marijuana for recreational use and purposes. So as that starts playing out, I expect that you're going to see some situations that we'll just have to, we're going to try to anticipate today and put in whatever safeguards we can, maybe some general rulemaking that allow OLCC to take other steps as necessary when we're not in session. Our session will end on, well, it has to end unless we extend it by supermajority vote, the 11th of July. And so basically we'll have the implementation under 91 start on July 1, and in 10 days, if we're not out by then, because I can tell you the President of the Senate wants us out before the end of June, then we will not have that opportunity to really to respond, because we probably won't know what actually is happening in that first week and a half to 2 weeks once legalization takes place. The next set of dates that are really important for Measure 91 is January 1 of next year, 2016. That is the date that OLCC will start accepting applications for the various licensing that's called for under 91. So that is going to be an opportunity for those individuals who want to get into the industry and the market will decide on how they're going to go forward and what licenses they want. There's no prohibition at this point that will allow individuals to have multiple licenses, meaning you can be a grower, you could be a processor, you could be a wholesaler, or you could be retail. Now, we're going to have another license category, and that's going to be for research. This is one of the areas that I'm very happy to hear that between OHSU, Oregon State University, as well as University of Oregon, all three of those institutions would like to be able to start doing research. Of course, as you can imagine, one of the concerns right now is because all those universities do in fact get significant funding from the federal government. There's kind of like a catch-22 because at this point, since the federal government has not recognized this on the overall to allow for those organizations, those entities that are receiving federal grant money, they're very hesitant in getting into the field. So we believe that once we establish a licensing process and we put it within the OLCC, we'll be much more in line with what the Cole memo says, and that we will be able to see a little bit more. We'll still be asking the federal government for a waiver, and that will be based on the licensing process and the oversight that the state's going to be doing. The waiver is necessary from, if I'm not mistaken, the DEA, that will allow for that type of use of cannabis and that type of research to go forward. Now, So let me tell you one other thing, then I'll open it up for questions. As I mentioned previously, I expect that you're going to see really two distinct systems. If you're familiar with Washington, I went up probably about a month ago and went to a couple of the different retail operations to see how they are working, and it was interesting between the three that I went into, how they were welcoming people, how they were establishing contact with their customers and others coming through the doors. And also the other issue as to explaining to us the tax. As many of you probably know, in Washington State, they have a tax system on marijuana for in the recreational arena that is three-tier, meaning it's at the local levels, city, county, as well as the state. And so it's reached a 40% markup on product. So 40%, as you can imagine, is not going to do anything as to impacting the drug cartels, the underground market. And so based on 91 having a $35 per ounce on the flowers, $10 on the leaves, and $5 on starts, we are going to do everything in our control to maintain those numbers. Now, you may see some change as to how the money will be distributed to allow for some of the money, as it was called for in the measure, to be distributed, allocated differently. But it's very, very important from my perspective, and my goal is to put the cartels out of business, is to have the lowest tax possible, and Oregon has that right now. There's no other state that's passed marijuana for recreational use that has a lower tax on it than we do. And so I believe we're in the best position of all of the states. That includes Colorado, Washington State, Alaska's closest to us, I believe there is $50 an ounce. And then D.C., I'm not even sure they actually established it. I think it's just that they have the right for simple possession, if I'm not mistaken. But the reality is we will be able to actually take on the drug cartels by maintaining a tax base that's lower, and that people will be much more willing to come into the recreational legitimate side of the business. And I'm hoping that we will also be able to entice that individuals who are in the market, or excuse me, in the production, growing and producing, will also be able to benefit under this process, because the cost for at the counter will not be as great. Now, I told you I was going to take questions, but just one other thing I'm going to tell you that we are looking at. Currently, the tax structure is set up that the taxes that is going to impose at the point of the grower. So when the grower is basically moving it out into the stream of commerce is where the tax is. Many of us have looked at that, and we think that's the wrong place to tax. We believe the tax should be actually at the point of sale of retail.
Yeah.
That's almost a given at this point. Both the co-chairs and I have spoken in some length on multiple issues. This is one that I think we're all in agreement. We think this is a much reasonable, sensible way of dealing with it. And we also are looking at, based on the potential for taxing of edibles and extracts, that we may be looking at that on a weight basis as well, based on THC. That's something that's kind of playing out right now. As you can imagine, for those who are into the production of extracts, from my perspective, I guess I should say, is that taxing at the point of the leaf as compared to the final product doesn't seem appropriate. It seems to me that we should be looking at having something across the board as it pertains to THC, and that way I think we can actually have a more vibrant process and be able to ensure that it's going to be fair across the board for those who are producing flower versus those who are making secondary products.
Yeah.